Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
I do too.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
I got you.
Sing it.
Welcome, welcome back to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and today's date is May 22nd, 2019. And we, as we normally do, have a very, very exciting show for you. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, you know the motto for our show is, if it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. Now, the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American own solar installation and development companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands, HBCU campuses, to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the unemployment and underemployment among our young African-American millennials locally and nationally. Also, to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. It is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation. BSLF HBCU Radio Talk Show Initiative is also brought to you by the Scotton Communications Network, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production, online and traditional newspaper production, online and traditional speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, and speaker bureau management. And for further contact information, you can contact Scotton Communications Network. That's S-C-O-T-T-O-N, communicationsnetwork.com, all one word. But now that we've got that out the way, because, you know, we have to always remember, you know, nothing's free. As the brother used to say, freedom ain't free. But anyway, you can call us, and it won't cost you a dime, at 646-668-2948. Once again, you can call in at 646-668-2948. In our green room, we have a very, very interesting individual who I've known for a number of years, Mr. Thomas Cameron. And I have pronounced that last name correctly. I wanted to make sure I have that information out there, Mr. Thomas Cameron. And he is going to be, we're going to have a discussion about the D.C. Historic Homeowners Program that is available here in the nation's capital. And we're going to talk about how that sort of ties into renewable energy. But without further ado, I want to bring on my guest. Good morning. Well, we're gonna make this plain. Good morning, Mr. Cameron. My brother.
Yeah, good
PC.
Good morning,
how you
Mr.
doing today?
I'm just fine. How are you, Mr.
Bethea? I'm great, brother. I really am appreciated. Appreciate you taking time from your very very busy schedule to talk to us about this historic office of prevention here in D.C. for home. It's a program called the Historic Prevention Office is now accepting Part 1 applications for Historic Homeowner Grant Program. The submission deadline is July 1, 2019. The grants are available for low and moderate income households living in specific historic districts in the District of Columbia. Now, what is very, very unique for our listening audience, you are listening to a D.C. resident who I would say is one of the sharper knives in the drawer. And I mean that sincerely, not blowing smoke, because this brother has been on top of innovations and taking advantage of the numerous programs that they have for this aged population, our baby boomer population in the District of Columbia. He's a proud homeowner of a very, very, very nice home in Kingman's Park, which has been classified under the D.C. Department of Historical Society as a historical district in the District of Columbia. Now, I want to give people a little more detail, PC, on this program before I ask you to weigh in here. The grants are available to low and moderate income households living in specific historic districts. Grants can be up to a maximum of a minimum of $25,000, except for a maximum of $25,000, except for Anacostia Historic District, where the maximum is $35,000. Part one of the application will be reviewed for eligibility and received in a part two application to complete. Completed part two applications must be reviewed by the grant committee in early spring. Grants award will be tracked for restoration projects to begin in construction in May of 2020. You have three historic districts are now eligible for first time in the, including Emerald Park, Kingsman Park, and Wardman Flats. The following historic districts are eligible: Anacostia, Blagnon, Alley, Naylor Court, Capitol Hill, 14th Street, Detroit Park, Mount Pleasant, Mount Vernon Square, Mount Vernon Triangle, Shaw, Stuyvesant Section, U Street, and Tacoma Park. Grants are awarded on a competitive basis with preference given to major constructional repairs and work that restores important and perennial visual architecture features. Click Gallery of Homes links below to see examples of past grant projects. Such features include windows, doors, floors, porches, and ornaments and historic materials like brick, wood, and slate. The grant application is in a two-part process. Part one, owners provide photographs of their houses and general description of the repairs and restorations they propose to make. In part two, the homeowners will receive a detailed scope from HPO with instructions to solicit price proposals for general contractors. Homeowners must also submit complete household financial information in part two. A grant committee by the District of Office of Planning and the chair of the Historic Preservation Review Board will select grant recipients. Grants were created by the Targeted Historic Preservation Amendment Act of 2006. Any questions regarding this program, you can contact Brandon Meyer at 202-741-5248. Our email, brendan.meyer@dc.gov. Now, that we have sort of put that out there for our listening audience, we want to bring to the conversation someone who's been through the process and successfully completed this process. But it ain't as simple as it seems. So without further ado, Mr. Thomas Corbin, tell us a little bit about yourself, Brother Corbin, and sort of break down what brought you your attention to this specific grant, and what was the process like?
Well, good morning, first off, Mr. Bethea. And the process is rather lengthy. First, the application, you have a very narrow window to submit the application, which is usually about 5 to 7 days. And
Brother Corbin, could you speak up a little louder, more directly into your phone, because I can barely hear you. Yeah, we want to make sure our listening audience is getting this information.
Yes, it's rather the initial application that you filed, as you stated, was by July the 1st or June the 1st, June 1. And it's usually a very narrow window to apply. It's usually 5 to 7 days they allow to get the application in. And then you're waiting for a while to hear from them. It's not going to be a quick process. But my suggestion to most of your listeners is that they be very diligent about following up and don't wait for the HBO office to come to you. You need to go to them and go in person. And this is how I was able to make this happen.
Yeah, well, Mr. Corbin, I want to stop you right there. I hope y'all are listening very, very carefully. This ain't something that you can call out there and think that they're just going to return your phone calls or your emails. You may have to show physically up, and I know that Mr. Corbin did. That's why he was able to be successful in this process. So I just wanted to reemphasize that point, TC, because a lot of folks don't understand. Yeah, these are your tax dollars at work, but if you don't go to work, they won't work for you. So go
ahead.
Yeah, because this is like almost hitting this $25 grant is like hitting the D.C. lottery with a pick, what's that? That's a pick four with their $5 straight
on. No taxes. No taxes.
Yeah, with no taxes? Oh, no question. Now, you have successfully completed that process, and I know that you went and signed that contract, but I want you to go into a little more detail with some of the twists and turns and things that you had to do, because I think you had to contact your council person on and get them to sort of move on this decision for you, because it was giving you a few problems, as I recall in one of our earlier conversations. So I want you to weigh in on that, Brother Corbin.
Well, yes. Yes, sir, Mr. Bethea. Well, after, repeated attempts to contact the office and through emails, I didn't get responses. So you have to go in and talk to
people. This was in relationship to your application. You had actually already filed and did your due diligence. You had already been through the process of putting your application, and you were following up, correct?
Yes. But initially, the deadline was the 11th for me, and our project was the 11th of March. Well, I wasn't able to get a response from the HBO office until May the 11th, approximately. So it was 60 days before I was able to shake anybody or get someone to really notice me. And finally, I went in, and by going in, I was able to do the signing my contract at that time. And I suggest that instead of calling or sending emails, you may do that also, but you need to go into the HPO office and ask for these people. And, of course, I'm sure they're busy because they're trying to process these applications, but it's taking an inordinate amount of time to complete the process. It's not going to be a week or so that you hear back. You have to be diligent about going in and requesting information.
Well, I want to reiterate what you just said concerning our listeners being diligent with this process, because when you begin to look at these historical societies, I'm not going to call it nothing but what it is. There is a large, large gentrification movement taking place in the District of Columbia, which we know. We live here. But this is not just something that's pertinent in Washington, D.C. It's happening in every major metropolitan area in the United States of America, specifically where you have large African-American population bases, and you have redlining traditionally from the banks, the state, and your federal governments toward our communities. And these communities have been left as distressed communities for some time now. We're talking 30, 40 years. Now that there is a revitalization process going on in our urban cities, space has become a very, very, very valuable commodity. And when you begin to start looking at more traditional neighborhoods such as Kingman's Park, you got Spingarn High School, you got the stadium, RFK Stadium complex there. When we're talking about this historical program, we're not talking about the entire area. So I want Mr. Corbin to weigh in on just how tight those boundaries are in that targeted area, which is considered to be historic. Because it's not all of Kingman's Park. It's just a designated section. And it's very, very tight, which I discovered the same thing as in Anacostia, that it's not for all Anacostia. It's just for right around the Big Chair area off Martin Luther King area. So could you elaborate on that aspect of this process and that information for our listening audience of PC?
Sure. Well, first off, the boundaries are tight. In Kingman Park, they include a narrow area that crosses Benning Road and covers a very partly by Spingarn there, but Langston Terrace is left out, all that area through there. And most of the areas on the other side of Benning Road are left out of the Kingman Park project.
Historic.
Yes. But also I wanted to add that, you know, in the process, I had to get assistance from, you know, my council person and put them on the project. So just to remind the listeners that they don't wait. Don't be afraid to contact your council person or anybody.
City council people, because
and I must
this
say,
money. Go right ahead, Mr. Corbin.
Because shortly after I contacted the office, I got a response. So that's, I got my letter of approval. So, you know, if you feel you're being mistreated or if you didn't feel it was a fair process, you can get your council person in your area to go ahead and check into it for you.
Now, this show is entitled Solar Now and the Future. with its economic impact on Black America. So people want to know, well, what does this have to do with solar? Well, the reason why it has to do something with solar is that I also know that Mr. Corbyn has applied for the Solar for All program. Now, I also am aware of the fact that there is a permitting process for applying for getting that construction permit for that work to be done. Has anyone done that for your property, Mr. TC?
As far as the solar?
For the solar, did anyone talk to you about starting a permitting process, or did someone just simply tell you because your property is located in a historical district, you wouldn't qualify? And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I spoke with Brandon Myers this morning, since we talked earlier. And he indicated to me that it was very, very clear that there's people out here who have projects, may not want to do something. They'll just simply tell you it's in a historic district. He said no. If you want to know whether your property will qualify in the historic district, there is a permitting process for getting the work due, just like when you apply for your B, I know that you also operate a B&B from your residence, and I know that you had to do certain renovations work, so you had to apply for a construction permit to do that work, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And also you have to apply for the business license and so on and so forth.
Yes, right.
But go ahead.
That's right. So that is what Mr. Myers said. If that homeowner applies for the business license for the construction license with them to put a PV system, there are certain questions, and you have photos that you have to provide them, and they can tell you through that process whether you're, by looking at that application, whether your property will qualify or not in terms of the panels being physically visible. I know personally, because I've been to your property, that you have a flat roof, and it's impossible to see the top of your roof from the street where your house is located on East Street. You have a corner home, and the way that your property sits, you really can't see on the top of your house coming from the alleyway or from the street, from any way that you would come. If those panels were put flat on your install on your roof, they would not be possibly visible seen other than somebody who have a drone that fly over that could look down on top of the roof and identify your property. You could see, of course, you could see the panels then, but they're not visually able to see from the eye from standing or driving in a vehicle. And this is what Mr. Myers said to me, was if they didn't apply for a permit and submit for that install, there's no way that they can make say to you that your property don't qualify because you live in a historic district. So I just wanted to pass that information on to you, because that has been something that I've heard from not just you, but a number of folks who live in historic districts. Matter of fact, I have an email that I'm going to make available information by Mr. Cal, last name is Yost, Y-O-S-T. I've done close to 100 installations, and he's an installer of PV systems. I've done close to 100 installations in historic districts in the past 12 months, And my experience is that the HPRB has been entirely consistent in their permit reviews. You have to apply for the permit. The permitting process will determine whether or not any of these things can be seen, including the conduit, inverters, disconnects. Is not street visible, then it will be approved. If it can be seen, it will not be. It's quite binary. There are plenty of visible street installations in historic districts throughout the city. If you know what you to look for, you'll find the right line of sight. But arguing that the neighbor's installation is visible and therefore yours should be as well will get you nowhere. So this is what people have to do. They have to apply for the permitting process. And once you get the application, there's certain documents and information that you have to provide the historic office to get that permit for installing that system. And if it is
also make sure they send the photos.
Yeah, and the photos.
Excuse me.
And if an installer tells you, if you're in a historic district and you say will qualify for the Solar for All program through one of their grantees, and if they come back and tell you, oh, no, you live in a historic district, no, unless they started the permitting process, there's no way that they can tell you that. And then that information has to be sent over to the historic office, and they make the decision. It's not made by the contractor, who is the installer, nor the company that's administering the grant. That determination has to be done by the Office of Historic, the Historic Office, in D.C. Now, I got this directly from Brandon Meyer myself, the Office of Historic Homeowners. In the District of Columbia, their grant program. They're the same people who administer this grant are the same people who approve or disapprove whether you can put a solar system on your property if it's located in a historic district. It has to go through the permitting process, and either the homeowner can get that and start that process, or whomever is you're talking to about putting the PV system on your roof must start that process. Once they've started that process, they submit those documents with those photos to that office, and they'll make the determination. Anything other than that, people are simply just trying to play you. That's it. So we try to make it plain on this show, and I want to thank you very, very much, TC, because believe it or not, we've already killed 30 minutes on this issue, but I want to congratulate you on following up and following through. Now, there are some other issues, if you have a few more minutes, I'd like to discuss with you. Now, this particular grant that you have, they are telling you that you have to do very specific things with that grant. Would you share with our listening audience what this grant is indicating that you have to do with this specific grant?
Yes, sir. Well, this grant, you have some specific. In other words, they will send you the specifications of what they're requiring, and you will submit it to the contractor. And you have to submit. You solicit several contractors in the lowest bid. And I also want to add that if the contract that you entertain is lower than the total $25,000 amount, you can apply the remainder of that to some other projects on your house in addition to that. But they have specific requirements in terms of the particular brand. I don't have the name here with me, but they're only accepting one brand name. And I was explained that it's because they want to make sure that the work lasts, and they don't come back in a few years to have to repair it. But there's probably some other issues that are why they're picking specific providers for the materials.
I don't know what the issues are. All I know is this: I know, as a person who owns property and have owned homes and have gone through the renovation process, that it's always more cost effective if that homeowner is not locked into one particular brand, because you can go and get the same quality from a larger company. And I'm just using this for example, Home Depot or Anderson Windows, because these are national brands. Let's talk about it. I know that these companies are big enough that they can give you more bang for your buck in terms of quality and warranty than a smaller company. So I can deal with them saying, well, you got to go to two or three other contractors to see who will give you the best number for the work. Because some people are going to, everybody's price is what their price is. People's overhead.
But HPO has to approve the contract.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Now, all these contractors, people who are already registered with them, or through the government agency, or do they provide you with the list of contractors, or they just tell you you can go out and find your own?
Oh, no, the rule is you have to go find your own contractor. They're not going to participate in that part of the operation.
Yeah, well, I'm just indicating that because each program is different. Because the Solar for All program, the only people that you can utilize are the people that particular grantee, who they may not select that contractor, how they go about selecting who does the work. But they give the homeowners options. And all I'm saying is, even if you get a contractor to give you a better number for the physical labor for that project, the other part of it is material. If, in fact, I can go to a larger, well-known company and get the same quality and same warranty as the brand that the Department of the DC government is saying, I got to use this specific brand, if this is a national known brand, I just feel that they sort of tie the dollar, that which is a grant, I know, but you're also paying taxes, that the tax dollars that are being paid, once they're not giving the homeowner any basic leverage, because they're telling that contractor, whoever you select to do the labor, will have to use this specific brand, and I can understand about quality and warranty and all that. I got no problem with that part. I'm just saying that there should be some flexibility given to the homeowner who owns that, the ability to shop and see where, if, for example, if Lowe's, they have a contractor that manufactures all their windows, if you want to go and put windows and utilize them, Home Depot, Anderson. I mean, you have a plethora of major, major companies that can give you better numbers and the same quality, a comparable quality, but if the district tells that contractor he can only use that brand, that ties his hands as well as yours from being able to get the best bang for the buck. So if that's what they into, then that's what they're into. I just think that there should be some flexibility there in terms of understanding what their requirements, as long as you are going to a reputable company with a more that has a national brand that they know and their quality is comparable or better for the same or less, then they should be giving the homeowner should be giving that leverage. Now, that's just where I'm coming from with it. It doesn't mean anything, but when you begin to drill down on some of these programs coming with the D.C. government, sometimes the way that the regulations are one that you be thinking, well, is this one of them sweetheart things that they work out? You know, yeah, we got the program, and we earn the money, but we're going to tell you where you got to go and spend the money. That's all I'm saying.
Well, my understanding is they wouldn't bend on that you had to purchase, they had to use these specific brand of windows. And that was the way it was clearly explained to me, that there wasn't going to be any exceptions to that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, and I know that brands is just like going to the store. You go to the national brands that you know about, but if you get to reading the ingredients on the label, you'll find out those off-brands are made out of the same ingredients. They do the same thing. If it's clothes, if it's soap for clothes, they wash clothes. That's what they do. But people go with branding. That's what branding, that's what marketing, that's what it's all about. But I don't think that the D.C. government should be in that business, okay? That's all I got to say on that piece. Now, before I let you go, brother, I'm looking here at this whole issue around the Solar for All program in the District of Columbia. And people who've been following my show, they know I've been beating the drum around this thing. But I know that you run into some issues, and I want to ask before you go. Now, nobody has started a permitting process with you, and nobody got any information, and nobody submitted no information to the Historic Preservation Office on your property concerning that solar install. So I know you're not throwing your hands up on that, are you?
No, I'm not. But before, on a point you were talking, no one actually came out and looked at my house to see. I was just told randomly over the phone that my house doesn't qualify. Of course, I resisted that. And, of course, I haven't heard back. I insisted. But as you said before, I'm going to have to take pictures of all sides and reiterate to them that my house would qualify for it, because they're telling me they want me to go into the collective program.
Well, what I'm saying to you is that if nobody started a permitting process, they blowing smoke, and you can get in contact with DOEE and let them know and contact your councilman on that. Because, as I said, I got this directly from the horse's mouth, Mr. Brandon Myers. He said that is what determines whether your house qualifies in a historic district or not. When you begin the permitting process, there's an application. There are certain documents inside that application that you must submit with those photographs. Once they get that information, then they can look at it and they can make a decision straight up and straight down by looking at the information that's in the permitting application process. If nobody began that process, if somebody just told you that randomly over the phone because you're in the historic district, no, you do not accept that. I'm just telling you what this gentleman just shared with me, because I made the phone call this morning before I had you on the air, because when we do this show, we take it real serious. We try to bring information, news that people can use. Now, I hope folks appreciate what this brother is telling you about these grants, because when you can get a $25,000 grant or $30,000 a PV solar system put on your rooftop, which is going to cut your energy costs and put new windows and upgrade your property, that's major.
Not to mention to increase the value of your home.
Not only does it increase the value of your home, that keeps you from having to go in your pocket to do it. That's just as important as increasing the value of the house. Because if you can't increase the value of your house, if you ain't got nothing to get the work done with, and this is why we're bringing this program, and that's why I wanted you on, because you are one of those type of individuals where you follow up, man, and I'm real appreciative of you taking advantage of programs, because this show is what we're about. We're trying to bring folks on this show that have actually went and through the process and been successful in the process, and let our community know, because black folks, we got this thing about us. Well, man, I went down there, man. They didn't do nothing. I called back. Nah, you may have to go back down there again. You may have to keep calling. You may need to call, see your city council, whatever it takes. If you ain't making six figures in this town, and most of us are not, you need to be taking advantage of everything comes down the pipe, because property taxes in Washington, D.C. is no joke. And we all paying it with these compliance fees on the gas, water, and electric bills to fund this green bank. So I'm going to get off my soapbox, and I want to thank you, Mr. Thomas Cameron, for being a guest on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listening audience in closing?
Yes, sir. I'd like to give you your accolades. It was on your program. I heard about these programs, and I was able to take advantage of them. So I just wanted to say that thank you for your information that got me on.
Well, you're more than welcome, brother. That's why I do this show. Even though I know folks downtown who are supposed to be spending a whole ton of money for community engagement. I know I went down there and applied for a $25,000 grant with the Department of Energy and Environment, headed by Tommy Wells. Matter of fact, he's been on the show. I've had Ms. Dr. Hughes, the head of employment services for the Department of Employment Services on Minnesota Avenue, a dynamic sister. She came on here and talked about the D.C. Infrastructure Academy. I've had the head of DCSEU located at 80 M Street Southeast over in the Navy Yard, Ted, the director, real dynamic brother. He's come on this show and talked about their work. You name it, I've had folks on this, including grantees from DOEE, from Neighborhoods United, and numerous other grantees who participate in this renewable energy thing, but they felt as though, oh, I wasn't deserving of getting an award. In other words, somebody gave me an award over, I went to the church, and the gentleman was there from DOEE with nobody in the room, and said, well, we're going to increase the numbers. We're going to have a whole bunch of folks here next year. And I told him, I said, well, I'm the only one that got a radio show that does this every week. Why don't you give me some funding so I can pay Captain Hughes at WOL, 1450 AM at 95.9 FM, and get this show up on the main road where she said information is power. Because I think I do a hell of a job with what I do on this platform, Blog Talk Radio, streaming over Facebook and Twitter, all that's fine. But somebody got to know you there. And if you're not on a major radio station where you can reach the masses of people, disseminate this information that they need to be getting, then that means that just very few people will know about it. And I'm beginning to think that that's what they really want. Because if they're supposed to be helping 100,000 D.C. low and moderate income residents reduce their energy costs by 50% by year 2032, and you passed legislation in 2016, a 50% renewable portfolio standard, had a 5% carve-out for solar, and because of the shortfall, D.C. ratepayers paid $15 million extra for energy in 2016 and 2017. That number jumped to $26.6 million. And with this passing of this new 100% law that just was signed into law on December 19, 2019, with 100% renewable portfolio standard, Omnibus Act of 2018, with 10%, we talking about folks seeing some serious increases in these compliance fees on their gas, water, and electric bill to fund a green bank at $256.6 million. But don't let me start talking because I don't know what I'm talking about. This is just some stuff that I didn't make up. So thank you, Brother TC, for joining me on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. And that was Mr. Thomas Cameron, who is a resident in Kingman Park, who is a real sharp brother because his training was accounting. He attended a degree in accounting from the University of the District of Columbia. We've known each other, you know, over 40 years. And what I say to people on this show is we try to bring news that you can definitely use. Now, we're going to take what they call a pause for the cause, and we're going to take another slight commercial break, and we'll be right back here on the airwaves of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it.
Welcome, welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, you know that that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Now, you have to remember, you have to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Now, as we normally change and shift gears in our show, we always have to remind you that this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC. And the slogan for the show, if it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative serves as an economic blueprint for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation and development companies. Also to bring down the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize black-owned farmlands and our HBCU campuses for capacity and initiatives to develop solar installation projects to bring down the unemployment and underemployment of our young African-American youth locally and nationally, and to educate the black community locally and nationally about the impacts of economic impacts of climate change and the need for more environmental education through black talk radio programs such as Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on black Americans. Also brought to you every week by the black sports legend BSLF Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. Also by Scotton Communications Network, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production online and traditional, newspaper production online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, and speaker bureau management. For contact information, ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com. That's ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com. Now, as we shift to our news and events segment of our show, I want our listening audience to know, once again, you can join us at 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Please remember to press phone 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Looking under our news and events tab, we wanted to look at a issue, because on Capitol Hill today, when you hear the word bipartisanism, there's not too many things that's being done in a bipartisan manner on Capitol Hill. But this is something that the Senate, quote unquote, I didn't say the House, I said the Senate has launched a bipartisan initiative on long-term solutions for expiring energy tax credits. And if you are planning to put a PV system or purchase an electric vehicle, you want to listen and weigh in on this conversation. Now, this specific article that I'm going to be reading from was authored by Julia, last name is spelled G-H-E-O-R-G-H-I-U. Okay? It was published May 21st, 2019 in the Utility Dive. This article went on to say, tax credits have proven effective in a jump-starting the energy industry and driving adoptions of new technology and infrastructure. However, a credit's wind down and renewable energy has been gripped by uncertainty in recent years, with federal legislators approving short-term extensions. Both the chairman and the ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee announced a bipartisan initiative on Thursday to craft long-term solutions for expiring tax breaks, which task force focused on energy tax credits and disaster tax relief, among others. The wind production tax credit will end and close at the end of 2019, and the solar credit will begin to sunset. Already, industry groups like the American Council on Renewable Energy, ACOR, are predicting a decrease in renewable energy deployment in 2020 as the market is expected to constricting due to expiring tax credits. The tax forces are expected to be determined by the end of June. Long-term solutions and possibilities that can be enacted this year to end the annual extenders drama and provide certainty to the taxpayers who utilize these provisions. Finance Chairman Chuck Grassley, Republican from Iowa, said in remarks on the Senate floor, the modern renewable energy as we know it was built on tax credits that are phasing out. Bill Parsons, COO of American Council on Renewable Energy. Other legislators have proposed bills intended to drive deployment by impacting the number of tax credits, including energy storage, which has become a priority for this year in renewable energy industry. Tax forces that are accessible, legislators have an increasing need to strategize for a post-phase-out period for tax credits in the energy industry. The modern renewable energy, as we know it, was built on tax credits that are phasing out, Bill Parsons of Acorn, chief operating officer, told Utility Dive. Grassley and the ranking members, Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon, called the sixth task force to formed the Senate Finance Committee Energy Task Force, led jointly by Senator John Tuberne, a Republican from South Dakota, and Senator Debbie Tabnow, Democrat from Michigan, to employ and Community Development Task Force, the largest in their eight. There's eight members in each one on these task force in the Senate. And they're talking about all of the proposals that nobody seems to be able to get it done. But this thing is in the Senate. The task force will focus on 42 provisions that will expire between the end of 2017 and the end of 2019. The group would work to establish a level playing field for technologies beyond a year-by-year extension decision, which could get kicked down the road, given shifting congressional priorities, thus reducing uncertainty and among investors. Classically stated, possibility solutions that the task force might identify to provide long-term certainty for particular industries phasing out credit phases over longer periods gives the industry a guided path to self-sufficiency. Scaling back the tax provision, considering elimination of the provision, is there little or no case for continuing the temporary policy. Extending provisions without reform and considering whether permanently warranted. The exercise appears to be an attempt to look past extended errors of tax credits, Parsons says, extending when tax credits, ensuring a valuable long-term path for credits is important to Iowa. Largely for the amount of wind power, Iowa has a 7.3 gigawatt of installed wind capacity, according to Iowa Wind Energy Alliance. Grassley staff could not speak to the timing or potential products. Task force members will bring their priorities, according to the spokesperson from Grassley's office. The Energy Task Force also includes Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat from Rhode Island, has helped lead a bipartisan effort to extend carbon capture tax credits and other legislation intended to support technology development, the bills, house bills, and the push for storage. Now, this is we're talking about cutting technology, folks, and this is very, very important. While the Finance Committee Task Force are cutting underway, bills are being introduced in the White House and in the House and the Senate support energy initiatives. Let me make that plain. In the House and in the Senate, nothing about no White House. The 45 ain't trying to do nothing but go the other way. So we not even dealing with 1,600 down there. We're talking about the House and the Senate, okay? Among the latest, on May 14, members of the House and Ways Means Committee introduced a bill that would allow transfer of renewable energy tax credits beyond a specified technology. Representative Earl Blumner, Democrat from Oregon, and Darlene Lawhood, Republican from Illinois, sought to continue increasing renewable energy deployment, especially wind energy, by allowing the transferability of production of investment tax credits. The bill would give renewable energy industry additional tools to help invest in the future energy, Blumner said. In February, Grassley and Wyden introduced bipartisan legislation to restore the tax provisions that expire at the end of 2017 and 18 through the balance of the year. Wyden also introduced in May, along with 25 Democrats, a technology and neutral approach for incentivizing clean electricity, transportation, fuel, and conservation. The policy was to consolidate 44 energy incentives into three technology neutral provisions, electricity components that would provide 30% investment tax credits for 0.002 kilowatt production tax credits for facilities with zero carbon emissions. A lot of folks among ACORN members are relying behind this count of technology-neutral approach, Parsons said. 2019 priority is storage. A key priority for 2019 is giving the energy storage industry access to tax credits. Industry groups have called on lawmakers to expand the qualifications of energy storage systems under investment tax credits. For the past year, there is a wide range of policies lawmakers can consider to make grid more reliant and increase renewable energy deployment. As far as our members are concerned, getting the energy storage tax done this year would be a great place to start, Parsons said in his statement. The Energy Storage Association supports bicameral and bipartisan legislation last year to accomplish this, writing to the lawmakers approaching the end of their term, but the measure did not pass. At the beginning of April, Representative Mike Doyle, Democrat from Pennsylvania, introduced legislation awaited by clean energy advocates for H.R. 2096, a tax credit for energy storage technology. ACOR, ESA, and other groups voted letters of support for the leadership in support of the bill, including energy storage qualifying facilities in 30% investment tax credits, have gained bipartisan support, and clean energy advocates want to see it included as part of the extended package for other valuable legislation vehicles this year, Parsons told Utility Drive. Other options include adding into the infrastructure package as part of a broader energy reform legislation. This is what is on the hill, folks. Now, all this is going to impact the electric vehicles and these batteries for electric vehicles. So yours truly took upon him to take the time to sort of say, well, let's sort of delve in on what's coming down the pike and look at an article where AP Honda partnered to test vehicle grid integration with used EV batteries. Now, folks, these are things that corporations are experimenting with, but the legislation on the local policy level, which I set at Pepco last July and looked at a meeting, attended a meeting that was chaired by Mrs. Donna Cooper, who is a very dynamic sister, who is the president of Pepco in Washington, D.C., with her staff, as they were going over and discussing plan proposals for putting electric vehicle infrastructure in the district over the next 5 to 10 years at a cost of $15.1 million. And that money, they were trying to figure out a way for it not to have to come from their ratepayers, but guess what? Knowing the city council, they'll figure a way to make you pay. So yours truly was present on October the 9th under Mary Shea when she had hearings on the Omnibus Act of 2018. On October 29th under Councilman, I'll think of his name, not Gray, but he's in Ward 5. It'll come to me in a minute. But he also had hearings of McDuffie, who heads Economic Development, Councilman McDuffie. Almost drew a blank for a while. But the long and short was I testified not being in opposition to the bill, to be in opposition to the bill, without there being some amendments to the bill. And several of those amendments was that there be 35 cents, an amendment called the John Wilson Marion Barry Renewable Energy Reparations Amendment of 2019, where 35 cents out of every dollar collected from D.C. ratepayers, whether it be on your water bill, gas, or electric bill, should go into an African-American-owned bank doing business in the District of Columbia, and that the District of Columbia would implement the residential PACE program in the district. The PACE program is a public policy passed by Congress that looks at renewable energy upgrades the same way as water and sewer as public benefits. And it allows 100% of private investment, and we're talking about billions of dollars flowing into renewable energy infrastructure in this country because there's so much to be done. Matter of fact, Director Tommy Wells of the Department of Environment, D.C. Department of Energy and Environment, commissioned a report that was done that indicated that Washington, D.C. has $1.8 billion worth of renewable energy infrastructure to be put in place over the next 10 years, and they needed a green bank in order to leverage that private sector monies. Okay, so the mayor was supposed to be appointing members to the board of directors. I called Mr. Wilson, who, in fact, Jay Wilson, who is the one who is operating in the position as leading as the administrator for the Green Bank until Mayor Bowser appoints someone to the Green Bank. Now, I have been very, very, very concerned at the fact that no African Americans may end up on this board. And then there could be some that I don't know, because I don't know everybody. But the Green Bank Authority Board, all members must be D.C. residents and fit one of the following experience categories: a member with experience in affordable housing or community development. They have two seats on this board, Now, they're all volunteer positions. But we're talking about this bank being capitalized at $256.6 million of your dollars when you pay your gas, water, and electric bill over the next 10 years. Now, members with experience in financial, project management, or legal expertise in clean energy infrastructure, or green infrastructure, they have 3 seats. That's 5. Then you have 2 seats for members with experience at a financial institution operating in the District of Columbia. Now, these are what the criteria are if you are a D.C. resident and you fit into any of these criteria, and especially if you're African-American. Someone needs to be calling down there, putting their name up for the mayor to put give consideration to go on this board. There are 4 members have already been selected, I understand. It would, to me, be a travesty for this bank, for this board of directors not to be reflective of 47% of the population base of Washington, D.C. that happens to be African American. You know, because we sleep so many things in this town because ain't nobody talking about it. Guess who? Welcome to Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. We're the only ones talking about it. But I don't want to get off too far from talking about this battery storage piece because this is a major piece. But I wanted to put that in so our people can understand what's at stake. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. And I know because in preparing for my show every week, when I make calls to certain agencies, I don't get my calls returned anymore. I used to get calls when people thought I wasn't serious. Once they found out I was serious, oh, they don't want to talk to me. But I hope they're listening because I'm talking about you. Hello, D-O-E-E, Tommy. Hello. Now, I know that y'all got some upcoming things. And you have your grantees such as Solar United Neighborhoods. They have a June 1st Congress, Solar Congress. And I've already requested to be a presenter at that event. I haven't heard anything back, but I'm going to make sure that I know something because when I go over there, if I'm not a presenter, they're going to think I'm a presenter. I'm going to leave it like that. Now, as I was saying, looking at this electric vehicle infrastructure issue, there's been a recent article that was written by Robert Walton on May 21st, 2019, also in Utility Dive, which is a very excellent online information electronic news operation. They do an excellent job. America Electric Power and Honda has agreed to explore possible uses of used electric vehicle batteries, including renewable integration, while also seeking to address multiple challenges related to growing electrified transportation. The companies on May 15 announced Honda will provide used fit electrical batteries and AT for research aimed at helping the companies develop technologies and standards for future vehicle grid integrations, as well as new business models surrounding EVs. With millions of EVs expected to be hitting the road soon, automakers and the energy industry are preparing for a stream of used batteries. Nissan, Hyundai, and BMW all announced partnerships involving used batteries last year. See, folks, this is where you need to be looking at if you're a young person and you're trying to start out in business. You need to be targeting these arenas because this is where new business opportunities don't normally be created. There are slightly more than 1 million EVs on the road in the United States, but that figure is expected to rise quickly as it does a steady stream of used batteries no longer suitable for vehicles will become available for use in a range of energy storage applications and discounted prices. Experts say that the typical EV battery will be replaced after 10 years, having lost about 10 to 15% of its capacity, but these batteries can still have years of life left in them for other applications. And Honda and AP say they see opportunities improving energy security, reduce carbon emissions, and prepare a broad scale of electrification on transportation. Neither automakers nor utilities can address these complex technical policies and business issues alone. Ryan Hartley, manager connected the environmental business at the American Honda Motor, said in a statement, Honda launched a Fit EV 2012, part the automaker's bid to electrify two-thirds of its fleet by the year 2030. The company is also developing vehicle grid integration solutions, including priority smart charging programs and incentives Honda EV customers to charge their vehicle when there's more renewable energy on the grid. Honda and AP say that the knowledge gained from pilot can help companies to develop technology and standards to feature grid integration as well as new business models to improve value of EVs. Other automakers have found eager partners in the energy industry as well. So this is letting you know Nissan and EDF Energy in October announced they will work together in a project combining secondary life batteries with demand response capabilities to develop by the UK energy companies. Last summer, tech group Wallstar and Honda Motor Core announced a partnership to help develop markets for advanced energy storage systems. Utilize used EV batteries in utility-scale commercial applications. And EVgo EV charge stations in California began using second life BMW batteries last summer to reduce its reliance on electric grids during time of peak demand. Honda and other EVs focused work is going on as well. Nikki and Asian reviewed reports by companies also working with GM on ways blockchain can enable the grid integration of EVs, including possible two-way power flows. Now, this is where really the meat, what they say, everything meets the road. Young folk, I hope you're listening, because these technologies and business opportunities are where you need to be focusing your attention right now, because this is really, really what I think the African-American community needs to be focusing on, especially if you got some land somewhere and the interstate highway is running right through the middle of it, where you can build an electric vehicle charging hub. And if you got enough land, you can build a large-scale solar farm to power that hub and take that other energy, store it, and sell it. But this is not a small undertaking. It's more than a conversation. Believe me when I tell you that, because I'm involved in some processes right now, and it's a tremendous amount of responsibility and work. And if you're not willing to put it in, then it's not for you, because it's not just going to happen overnight. Now, we are always opening up our lives to our listening audience and telling them, you know, hey, you need to weigh in and tell us what you really think, you know, here on Blog Talk Radio, because we understand, you know, where this came from and where it's going. You know, we understand it truly, where it came from and where it's going. Now, we're trying to make sure that we are still on the airways with you here on Blog Talk Radio. So, as we try to shift through the, we're still here. As we try to shift through the processes here with the last closing portion of our show, we're going to be opening up our lines to the listening audience. And that's 646-668-2948. Once again, 646-668-2948. Now, what we want you to do is call in and weigh in on anything that we've been discussing this morning. And as we say, we always hope that we brought you some news that you can definitely use. So we're going to take a slight pause for the calls, and we'll be right back.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life.
Welcome, welcome back to the Airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know I'm your host, Ronald Buffet. You know, every week, as they always say, we find ourselves waiting on people to call. We really don't feel that the information that we bring to the community on a week-to-week basis is reaching the people that we need to reach. Now, we've reached out for help, as we've indicated numerous times, and we're finding out that those folks who are supposed to be about the business of engaging the African American community around this renewable energy industry, they don't want to talk about anything. They tell you that they can't come on your show, like Mrs. Erica Betterman, who's over the offices of sustainability out in Prince George's County. Matter of fact, people got upset when I went to Congressman Cardin's office about this issue in Prince George's County about the Transition Neighborhood Initiative, where they're telling Prince George's County ratepayers who are on fixed income that you can't even apply for a program because you don't live in the correct zip code. And when I put this in front of our city council person, folks. Nobody has anything to say, but that I will hear from them again when it's election time. They will show up wanting to put a sign in your yard. So these are the things that we come on this show and we raise holy hell about it. Because in the economic stratosphere out here, it's pure war, especially on African Americans in this country. Because as much as we've contributed and built in this country, the psychological damage that has taken place and put on the mindset of our people, it's sort of like 1971, I was a student at Morgan State University. And a group called Bootsy Collins came out with a song. It says, lend me your mind and your ass will follow. Okay? And that's where we are. It's the battle for the mind, folks, because what you think is what you do. And what you do is what you think. It all starts there. And if people aren't being programmed with the right information, then what do you expect? It's economic and pocketbook issues that we need to be discussing out here in black media. I hope that we brought you news that you can use. But until next week, we're going to say what we do all week. Every week, we say go in peace. And we hope that we made it plain and we brought to you news that you can definitely use. Until next week, goodbye.
Life is a song worth singing.
I got you.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
I got you.
Sing it.